it's the world-famous Bill Henry Show.
One would hope that that will lead to a rethinking in Iran as to what its long-term policy
the
toward...
The vice presidency is the most important decision that I'll make before I'm president. And it's something that I...
It's really unfortunate that bad decision that they made will prevent them from actually walking across the stage and graduating.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast at 4 a.m. on the East Coast, where truth is our bitch and the beach is just steps away here. El Pacifico out here at the Ventura Sand in California. And tonight, coming up, we'll have our open line segment. And we also will be discussing this hit and run in Hartford, Connecticut that has people talking. And why not? It's absurd. It's outrageous. It's people. Seriously. Did you hear about this? A man laying in the street, 78 years of age, and not one human being went over there to give him a hand. Not one human being got up off their fat ass, got out of their car, nothing. Traffic whizzed by. People crossed the street hither and thither. Maybe they thought it was a joke. But you know what? This idea that everybody is punking everybody these days, and everybody... I remember when I was doing my radio show, starting in around 1990, we used to create our characters, and we would punk callers with them. And when I got to a certain point in developing the show, I decided it was just too weird for talk radio, right? Little did I know that the culture was turning in that direction anyway with Borat. I love it. I had a Canadian radio station call me up, and they wanted to ask me if I'd like to give a comment on the Borat movie, because I was one of the punk guys, you know, one of the dudes that was going around doing put-on humor. And I said, no, but if Borat would like to comment on my show, and they thought, well, God, what an ego you have. Well, no, it's fine. It was just that, you know, while he was still figuring out, you know, while he was still trying to figure out what that large nipple was. We live in that culture now, and some people are so utterly stupid, they don't know how to see through any of that. The other reality that has been true since time began is that most human beings, 98% of the human race, sees nothing but their own sphere of need and desire. 98%. Now, that's the truth, and I don't even know if that's good or bad. It's where we are right now. It's who we are and where we are right now with our perception. In other words, most people don't have any real perception beyond themselves. And when I say 98%, I'm pretty close. And this is something that's actually been quantified by psychologists and others that work in the field. What's the awareness? What's self-awareness as opposed to awareness outside of yourself? The existential reality that everybody wrote about back in the day, the Jean-Paul Sartre, is basically this. It's that we only see what we need to see in other people, not what they need us to see in them. So, you know, Kafka wrote his book about metamorphosis. I know I'm getting really heavy here, bud. Don't start scratching your head.
I don't know who he is.
Franz Kafka was a writer. Go look him up. Go on your Apple.
I'm going to go to my laptop.
Go to your laptop. Bud just got his laptop off of eBay. Anyway, this man, a 78-year-old man, is tossed like a rag doll by a hit-and-run driver, and he lies motionless on a busy street as car after car goes by. Pedestrians gawk but appear to do nothing. One driver stops briefly, then pulls back into traffic. A man on a scooter slowly circles the victim before zipping away. The chilling scene, captured on video by a streetlight surveillance camera, has touched off a round of soul-searching in Hartford, Connecticut, with the capital city's biggest newspaper blaring so inhumane on the front page, and the police chief lamenting, "We no longer have a moral compass." Well, I would submit to the police chief, it'll make him feel any better. It's been a long time, if ever, we had the moral compass that he may be talking about. I'm not saying that human beings are bad and that we don't want to be better. But when I was a kid, and I'm talking now in the 60s, and people who are my age are going to remember this. Nobody younger than me. You won't know this story, guys, but I'm telling you this just so you can feel better about this generation of Americans to some extent. There was a story about a lady in New York City. Her name was Kitty Genovese. She was being attacked and raped in a park in New York within earshot of literally thousands of people. She was screaming. She was calling for help. And nobody did anything. And it was a national scandal. It hit the papers the next day. And it was just, it was the biggest news. Songs were written about it. TV shows and movies were written about it. It was a, oh yeah, yeah. It was all messed up. And I think that was like 1965 or 66. So what's this moral compass he's talking about? Now, I don't have, you know, I'm not one of these guys. I don't sit here and say the human race, oh, what a marvelous thing. But I do know it's all we got. It's all we got, and I know that we've been capable of some pretty great things. There have been great people among us who have shown us the way to greatness from time to time. They're very courageous. They're few and far between. They go where the rest of us don't want to go. They do great things that the rest of us are frightened to do. So we follow them, and we honor them, and we call them our heroes. But to actually be an individual, step outside of yourself and go to the aid of somebody who's in dire danger, that is a rare, rare thing. Chief Daryl Roberts in Hartford said, "We have no regard for each other." On Wednesday, he released the video in hopes of making an arrest in the accident that left Angel Arces Torres in critical condition. However, Chief Roberts and other city officials backtracked on Thursday. After initially saying he was unsure whether anyone called 911, he and other city officials appeared at a news conference in which they said that four people dialed 911 within a minute of the accident and that Torres received medical attention shortly after that. "People were putting information out too quickly. This moved too quickly," said Calixico Torres City Council President. Robert said his initial angry reaction was based on what he saw in the video. "The video was very graphic and sent a very bad message," the police said. Well, he's trying to say that because four people called 911 that this was a fantastic statement, but that no one attempted to even move this man, that no one even stood there to try to block traffic from hitting him, that no one got out of their car and went over to see if the man was bleeding, if the man could be helped up, to see if he could be moved. Forget it, Chief. I don't care if you got any phone calls there from the city council saying, "Man, this is making us look like a bunch of horses' asses out there, Chief. You better back it down a notch." I don't care what they said to you. What you said initially is right. Witnesses described what happened to the 78-year-old man there.
"The back of his head was what hit the car.
The guy laying on the ground, blood everywhere, his head was cracked.
But I don't understand why the people, when they happen, nobody's done to help him out.
I hope they catch the person, and I hope that justice is served, because that wasn't right. You know, an innocent man walking across the street, bam."
Did you get a chance to call 911?
No, I didn't have my phone on me at the time.
Did you go in and ask anybody to call 911? Did you go over and see anything about what was going on with the guy? Did you go over and try to help him up, maybe not move him, because, or at least stand there? The guy's laying in traffic. He could get run over by a truck. Hartford Police Chief Daryl Roberts is critical of those who witnessed the hit and run but didn't even bother to dial 911.
"It's a clear indication of what we have become. When you can see a man laying in the street who's been hit by a car, people just drive around him, walk by him, but you want to say, what are the police doing? Well, that's not a police problem. At the end of the day, we got to look at ourselves and understand that our moral values have now changed. We have no regard for each other."
Robert said that he was angry that the hit and run took place in daylight last Friday at about 5:45 in a working class neighborhood close to downtown in the city of 125,000. In the video, Torres, a retired forklift operator, walks in the two-way street just blocks from the state capitol after buying milk at a grocery store. A tan Toyota and a dark Honda that is apparently chasing it veer across the center line. Torres is struck by the Honda. Both cars then dart down a side street. Nine cars pass Torres as a few people stare from the sidewalk. Some approach Torres, but most stay put until a police cruiser responding to an unrelated call arrives on the scene about a minute and a half later. "Like a dog, they left him there," said a disgusted Jose Cordero, who was with friends Thursday, not far from where Torres was struck. Robert Luna, who works at a store nearby, said nobody did nothing. One witness, Brian Hare, told the Hartford Courant he didn't feel comfortable helping Torres, who he said was bleeding and conscious. The accident and bystanders' apparent callousness dominated morning talk radio shows in the Hartford area. The Reverend Henry Brown, a community activist, said in an interview, "I think these people are disgusting and despicable. I'd like to kick all their asses." No, he actually said, "It was one of the most despicable things I've seen." Well, it's basically the same thing. "I don't understand the mindset anymore. It's kind of mind-boggling. We're supposed to help each other. You see somebody fall, you want to offer a helping hand, don't you? Huh? The victim's son, Angel R.K., begged the public for help in finding the driver. My father's fighting for his life. The hit and run is the second violent crime to shock Hartford this week. On Monday, former Deputy Mayor Nicholas Carbone was beaten and robbed while walking to breakfast. He remains hospitalized and faces brain surgery. God, what a great town, huh? Anybody thinking of moving there? Hi, Phil. I was just transferred there, my wife and my four daughters. Well, rot's a rock. There was a time when they could have helped the man across the street. Now they mug and assault him, the police chief said. Anything goes. You have our sympathies, Chief. It's a wild world, baby. But you know what? It is what it is. It's the reality of the human race. It is a rare thing, indeed. So let's get better at that. What do you think, huh? Can we do that? I mean, I'm not going to do it, because I'm the talk show host, man. I'm the guy that tells you to do it.
This last piece of...
Never mind, Kaith. Oberfuhrer. 1-800-449-8255. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Just stick around, you know? Just.
The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Here's Les in St. Louis. Les, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, Phil, I like your show a lot. I'm enjoying it every night.
Thank you.
You're talking about the man that was hit in Hartford, and I had a similar experience here in St. Louis. A man was hit by a truck that had come out of the depot where they do the loading here on the Union Pacific that goes west, and I saw him hit, and I went to help him, but a van came by, and before I could get over the street, because he was about probably maybe three lanes away from me, I was at a Starbucks coffee shop, and I went to help the man, and a van came by and hit him again. He got up, and he was attempting to keep going across the street, and the van hit him. And he went down, and then in a succession, looked like a Suburban, and then a Volkswagen Bug. And each time he got up, and I tried to make my way to him. But understand, this is a four-lane boulevard right up near the river, near the arch. You know, Mr. Henry, here in St. Louis?
Okay, yeah. So how many times was this man hit?
He was hit by the truck initially, and he went down, and I thought for sure...
What part of the truck hit him?
The front right of the truck. He was not run over, but the front right of the truck hit him, and it was a 18-wheeler. But he went down, and he sprung right up, and I thought it was a joke the way he went down and then sprung up and began to walk again. And that's when the lady in a Suburban hit him, and he went down again, and then the Volkswagen came. By the time there was nothing I could do because the cars kept hitting him, and eventually he did make it across the other side, and he went into the Starbucks. I asked him, I said, "Are you all right?" And he said, "I want a coffee, and I got to sit down." But I, to my memory, I was the only one that would help him.
I want to get this story straight, okay?
Yes, sir. You see, I know it's...
No, the guy was coming across the street, got hit by a 18-wheeler.
Yeah.
And then he got hit by a Suburban?
It was a lady in an SUV, I think it was a Suburban. The 18-wheeler was going south and hit him. He spun, fell down, and then he sprung right up. And then when he began to walk across again, the lady in the Suburban was coming east and hit him with the right front. He spun around and he went right into the Volkswagen Bug and hit the windshield. And that's when the Bug stopped and he slid off the front of the Bug. But then that lady went around him. There were two ladies I know that hit him because I could see by that point he'd gotten closer. He was initially hit in the first lane. He was hit by the Suburban in the second lane. He made his way to the double yellow line. That's when he got hit and slid down the hood of the Volkswagen. And then... she went around him, he got up, and I know he was straightening his slacks, And it looked like he was all right, but I'm still trying to get to him because I've done paramedic work. And that's when he got hit again by a three-wheeled motorcycle. It was one of those motorcycles with a sidecar, and it was a man, and it looked like to be a dog, as stupid as that sounds. And he hit, the motorcycle hit him. He flew over the motorcycle and landed, looked like he landed on his chest.
Good Lord.
Yeah. That's when he got up, and in the final, the fourth lane was closest to me, and I'm watching this, and I wanted to help him. But finally, when he got into that lane, that's when he got hit again by a Cadillac that had it was a convertible. And again, he hit the windshield of that. The Cadillac slowed down, so he began to slide down the front of the hood, and then the Cadillac sped up. He bounced off the windshield and went over the back of the Cadillac. And there was nothing I could do.
That guy got hit, by your reckoning, by four or five vehicles.
Yeah, and when he got across to the Starbucks, because I had already gotten the coffee that I wanted, he went inside. I said, "Are you all right?" He said, I just, if I can sit down and get my wind, he said, I got the wind knocked out of me." And then he went and he got a latte and they got a New York Times. But
are you telling me this guy, after getting hit by a three-wheeled motorcycle?
It was one of those with a sidecar.
Okay, and there was a dog in it?
Yeah, this is a guy. These people that have their dog or their cat in a car, in on a motorcycle.
He got hit by an 18-wheeler. He got hit by a Suburban. He got hit by, did you say a Cadillac?
He got hit by a Suburban. Then he got hit by the Volkswagen van.
Then he got hit by a Volkswagen van, by a bug.
By a Volkswagen van.
You said a bug.
But I meant a van. It was a bug, yeah. But I meant a van.
It was a bug, but you meant a van.
Yeah. Then he got hit by the motorcycle. Then he got hit by a Cadillac, and the ironical part on the Cadillac is the Cadillac had these large longhorn. If you've seen these longhorns that they have on a steer,
yeah,
the guy had wired these longhorns on the front of his Cadillac because I guess he was a Texas fan. I don't know what, but the horn gored. It looked like it partially gored him. And I said to him later, and when the police took the report, I said, I believe he was gored, he was hit, and he was gored.
He was gored by the horn on the front of a guy's Cadillac?
Yeah, and I said that to the officer, and he put it down, and the man was he called it a hit and gore. It was a hit and gore and run. And that's when I sat down with a man, and I said, "My God, my God." And he said, "I just got the wind knocked out of me. If I can get a New York Times and a coffee, I will be on my way. I won't bother anybody." And I said, "Sir, I tried to get to you."
What were you doing the whole time when these cars were hitting him?
I was, every time I would try to make my way across to help him, he'd bounce up, or he would slide off the fender of a car, or and then he'd be up. And I'd try to get to him. He'd be hit again. I saw him. He slid. He got gored on the horn of the Cadillac, and that's when I tried to make my way to him. But by then, he'd bounced off the windshield, and he was up. And finally, he got to me, and there was nothing I could do. There was nothing I could do.
So when the man finally made it across the street, you were talking to him?
Yeah.
Was he conscious?
He seemed to be okay. He said, "All I need is a coffee and a New York Times, and I'll be on my way. I don't want to be a bother to anyone."
Even though he had been, you say he was gored by the horn on the front of a Cadillac.
Yes, sir, because the man had put these longhorns on it.
Some guy with a convertible Cadillac and a longhorn. What do you think of that, bud?
Yeah, I've seen guys do that. My brother-in-law did it.
Yeah, my brother does it, too. You get a old 65 Fleetwood or something, you put horns on it, and you feel like you're all this, like you're a Texas oil man or something. It's pretty fun. But on the way out of the Starbucks, I saw him doing a crossword puzzle. I said, "Are you okay?" He said, I'm a little foggy. I usually love the crossword puzzle, but I can't, I don't know it. I don't know it anymore. And I said, "Are you having problems with a question?" He said, "I just don't understand it any longer. And I've always loved the crossword puzzle." He said, "But I don't want to be a bother to anyone." And he continued to work on it.
So the guy's coming out of the New York with a New York Times doing the crossword puzzle and a coffee at a Starbucks after being hit by five vehicles that you could tell.
Yes, sir.
When did you talk to the police?
Well, they were called and they came. And the man in the Cadillac, he took off. Everybody took off except for the guy on the motorcycle with the dog. And he came in, but he was getting a coffee, and the police officer said, did you gore this man?" And I said, "No, the Cadillac gored him." And the officer said, "Well, I can't hold the man any further." And that's all I've tried to find out. I don't know.
We're going to look into it, sir. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, I love your show, Phil.
Thank you. A hit, gore, and run.
I never heard of that.
We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with more of your calls.
Phil Hendry.
President of the Western Estates Homeowners Association. She joins us from Western Estates, California, and something very unique and interesting has been instituted there at Western Estates. It's called the Carbon Footprint Quiz, which the homeowners there at Western Estates took a couple of weeks ago, and that information is now being incorporated into a larger database to find out how your community there, Ms. Dooley, can be greener. And thanks for joining us.
Very happy to be with you, and we're actually just relaxing this evening, watching a lot of the election returns, and very excited, I think, for the direction that our country is taking with more consciousness when it comes to the greening, and making sure that we don't leave a planet to our children that is a lot dirtier and worse than how we. You know how we found it.
Okay, tell me about this green quiz. What is this?
Well, it really isn't a green quiz. It's a test. It involves quite a number of questions. And you answer the questions to the best of your ability. The questions have to do with your consumption of fuel, how many fluorocarbons you've used, what kind of recycling you do or not. And from the answers, we are able to determine how much of a carbon footprint each individual leaves. And here in our community, of course, it's the kind of carbon footprint that any family would leave. And from this information, we're able to ascertain how much a family or an individual is leaving when it comes to the carbon. In the atmosphere. And once you take the quiz, or the test, as we should call it, Phil, then we are able to determine if you lived in the carbon that you yourself created, if you had to breathe that, how long would you have lived?
Right, that's the area that got us in trouble with McCullough.
That's my husband, Steve.
What was he saying?
Well, one of our neighbors, Catherine McCullough, that we are right now negotiating with, and we are hoping to resolve the dispute that we have with her concerning this green test.
All right, so this test enables an individual to find out how much of a carbon footprint he himself has left and tells him, had he been living in his own carbon dioxide that he created, when he would have died?
Yeah, exactly. How long, what would have been your life expectancy given all of the carbon that you have left in the atmosphere? And it is fascinating. We took the test, Steve and I, and we were very gratified to find out that, in point of fact, we would have extended our lives. That if we were only living in the carbon that he and I produced, my husband and I, as well as our three sons, Seth, Dylan, and Justin, that we would be living much longer. To give you an example, the average life expectancy of a female in America is now 81 years of age, and we're very proud to say that how long, Steve?
You lived to 110.
That I would live to be 110, and Steve, the life expectancy for men is 76?
79.
And my husband would live to be 91. So.
Well, not as long as you, but he's still...
But still, we've extended our lives, and that's something you try to communicate to your friends and your neighbors.
All right, now, who is this Kathleen McCullough? She's a neighbor of yours?
Kathleen is one of our homeowners here in our Bougainvillea phase. She bought a beautiful 6,000-square-foot floor plan But she lives alone. Her husband died 2 years ago. And as a result, obviously, she doesn't need as much as she used to. But nonetheless, she does continue to, and we were very shocked to hear this, she does continue to produce quite a bit of a carbon footprint.
Now, you determined this by what?
Well, we determined this by the test results. Everyone turned the test results into us. And
all right, so this carbon testing, this green test, to tell people how much of a carbon footprint they're leaving, you guys administered as the Homeowners Association?
Yes, well, I administered. I'm the Homeowners Association president, using the powers that are granted to me under our CC&Rs, I can require our homeowners to spot check, to take these tests, to see what they're doing to our environment and to show them that if it were a perfect world, I suppose, this is what they'd be doing to themselves. And
why do you say a perfect world? It's just interesting, you know.
Well, Phil, because we really don't want to have to live in other people's pollution and other people's carbon footprints.
Yeah, the other people's carbon footprint got a deal.
All right, so go ahead. Tell me about this Ms. McCullough.
Well, it's Mrs. McCullough. She's a very elderly woman. She's 76 years of age.
But she's not married or...
Well, but she's very elderly and...
Well, you're right. The term is Ms. or I guess it's Mrs.
Well, it is Mrs. even if she hasn't been married because she's elderly. And at some point, it's appropriate to call women who are of advanced age Mrs. We don't think that is unusual at all. Once you reach a certain age, what doctors call decrepitude or general malaise begins to set in, and you are Mrs. You're no longer Ms.
Yeah, you're not Mrs.
Right, is that your husband? Because I can barely hear him.
Yes, see, let me do it, okay, honey.
Well, I
don't
know. I
want to
tell about that. The thing.
Let me do it, all right? So, Phil, I'm sorry.
So you were going to tell me this lady...
Yes, she took our test. And at that time, we said to her, we do have the results of your green test. Kathleen, can you come down to the Homeowners Association office? We're in the community center. And she said yes, and she came down, and we sat her down, and I was there, Janice Grayley, who is one of our... board members. She was also there. And a couple of the other people who are on our Homeowners Association board. And we decided that we would sit in a semicircle around her so that we could focus our attention on what she needs. The results of the test were not very encouraging.
I was going to say, you're sitting there, you say a semicircle of how many people?
Well, we decided that we would bring most of our Homeowners Association board. So there were about... It wasn't all of us, but there were about 25 people there.
Well, how many people are on the Homeowners Association board?
Well, we have a total of 116 people on our board because we are, we're not a very big community, but we do monitor an awful lot that goes on here, and we need a lot of people, and there are a lot of people who are interested in being members of our board.
All right, so the lady is there.
So she's there in the office, I'm sorry. And we did arrange ourselves in a semicircle around her, with her sitting in a chair, and most of us elevated ourselves, either on a desk or sitting on a higher bistro-style chair, so that in elevating ourselves above her, she would know that what we had to say to her was very important. The meeting began at 2:15 on Tuesday, and at that time I brought in...
Okay, can we, if you wouldn't mind, Ms. Dooley, can I... skip all of this?
Well, we did have the portfolio.
No, can we tell me what it was that you wanted to tell her?
Well, essentially what we wanted to tell her was that her green test came in, and according to the results, she should be dead. And what that means, Phil, is this.
Dead?
Yes.
Because if she were living in her own, in the carbon dioxide that she created...
Yeah, if she were living in the carbon dioxide that she created... She would have died at the age of 39. Well, she is 76. And what that tells us, and it is very disturbing, she's been living really on borrowed time. She's been living on someone else's oxygen. She's created enough carbon dioxide to have killed herself by the time she was 36 years of age. And yet she still, as my kids would say, and yet she still lives.
Yeah, my kids would say that.
So we brought her in, and I said to her, by all rights, Kathleen, and you're a wonderful woman, and we love you. We do love you. But we use the term, you're a dead woman walking. You're dead, and you should be dead. And she looked shaken, and we told her why. And she left, and
my wife's getting a little emotional about it.
I'm sorry. I know it's emotional.
Well, I'm not feeling emotional so much for her as I am for the people who've been harmed by her and by others like her. I'm not singling her out. What we've done, Phil, in the intervening days, and as we've all calmed down and as we've all begun to just recognize what we have here, a woman who has stripped away 40 years of another person's life.
Let's be clear here, though, Bobby. It's not another person's life.
I'll do it, Steve. Well, it is, Mr. Henry.
It's 40 years that she would have taken from her own life, but you disseminate that carbon dioxide. Yes, it's impacting other people.
Well, nonetheless, Phil, we began what we call our homeowner enhancement, and when we see her, we remind her that she is lucky to be alive. We have placed a coffin in her front lawn. Let me explain.
A coffin?
Yes.
Why? I mean, forgive me, but it sounds like this is a little harassing.
No, it's not, Phil.
You've done the CCNRs, Mr. Henry. What you're allowed to do.
Steve, let me do it.
But yeah, I would rather speak to you.
Yeah, Steve, he wants to speak to me.
No, CCNR.
He wants to speak to me. We placed a coffin on her front lawn as part of a fountain that she already had there. So we told her, Kathleen, this is going to be a part of, and I'm very emotional about this.
Well, Ms. Dooley, I realize you're crying now for not this lady Kathleen McCullough, but for other people.
Well, I am, but I feel bad that we had to do this. She has a fountain. I said, well, we'll put the coffin near the fountain. And, of course, she made a very, very big scene at our Homeowners Association meeting. In fact, that woman from the Clinton campaign reminds me a little, doesn't she, Steve?
Oh, yeah, the lady that bitch.
Well, Steve...
I would rather you not use that word, sir.
Well, that is appropriate.
What'd you say?
I would rather you not call the woman a bitch.
Well, sound like an old bitch.
All right, we got Kathleen McCullough on the phone.
I wasn't made aware of this at all. I didn't know she was coming on your program.
Well, we called her up because we wanted to talk to her face-to-face, if you don't mind, Ms. Dooley.
Well, we've already dealt with Kathleen with the coffin and with a Dead Woman Walking, which is a program that we have put in place.
Dead Woman Walking, now this is not just something that you have, that you call her.
This program put in place.
Well, get her on the phone, will you, bud?
Yeah, line four is Kathleen McCullough.
Ms. McCullough?
Yes, I'm right here. I am so grateful to be on your program, Mr. Henry, I can't tell you. This woman put a coffin in my front lawn, on my front yard, and said that I was, in essence, dead meat, was the word she used.
You know, Kathleen, I didn't say that.
You most certainly did. You said I was dead meat, that I was a woman who was decomposing before your very eyes because of a carbon footprint. Or some gobbledygook like that, that your crazy, screwy husband was bothering me about.
You know, there's no need to talk about my husband that way.
You know, Kathleen, all I said was, you got to put the coffin on the front lawn.
Yeah, your husband comes up and told me I had to put a coffin on my front lawn. He said I had to take part, Mr. Henry, you there?
Yes, ma'am.
He said I had to take part in something called Dead Woman Walking. It was called Dead Woman...
Can I interrupt for a minute, Phil?
Go ahead.
The program is called Dead Woman Walking, A Homeowner's Guide. And it lets people who are homeowners know...
Now, I can say it lets people that are homeowners in Western Estates know just exactly how dead they are, what they'd look like if they were still around. So they actually had a computer-enhanced photograph of mine showing me as a corpse 30 years later. And they said, this is what I'm supposed to look like.
Ms. Dooley, that is unnecessary.
No. That was a computer. enhanced photo, yes.
You said it was of me, wasn't it?
But it wasn't.
No. What they did, Mr. Henry, is they went to a website and they got pictures of decomposing corpses and put these on the front lawns of people and said, we computer-enhanced your photo. It is uncalled for.
I went down. I got down to Kinko's.
My husband went to Kinko's.
Oh, wait. You had pictures of corpses.
They went to a website, Mr. Henry, and got pictures of corpses. They got one of a woman who had died of starvation in Africa and said, this is your photo, this is what you look like, and
we computer-enhanced your photo.
No, you did not. Am I a black woman?
Well, you know what? Some of your political opinions...
Am I? Oh, my God!
Oh, look, buddy, this is not the way to deal...
Oh, my God!
Not the way to deal with a Homeowners Association presidency.
Well, Mr. Henry... her opinions are very liberal.
Yeah, she might as well be Barack Obama's mother.
Oh, are you listening to this? And this is why I said I wanted to come on this program, because I am not going to sit here and listen to this woman say that I'm a dead woman walking a homeowner's guide and have a picture of a rotting Ethiopian corpse that supposedly is me.
That's racist. That right there, Ms. Dooley.
How dare you? How do you figure that's racist?
Because what is up with you and some of your political opinions?
Mr. Henry, my wife is trying to be president of homeowner.
And Steve, will you shut the hole under your nose? Honest to God, Steve.
How dare you?
Oh, listen to the way she talks to her husband, too. Shut the hole under your nose.
Well, I can certainly do it with you. So I tell you what, why don't you shut the matzo hole under your nose? Hmm? Get it?
Oh, you anti-Semitic bitch. You know what I'm going to do?
All right, ladies, we're way off course here.
You bet we're way off course.
Why don't you go ahead and just shut that Manischewitz sewer that you got under your nose?
All right, but Ms. Dooley, I'm going to cut you off and hang up on you. This has taken a wrong turn.
No, this took the wrong turn when you let that woman on the air.
Mr. Henry, I'm here. You know what? I'm done.
World famous... Phil Henry Show.
And now it's time for Frodo the Puppet, as Frodo asks me, Phil Henry, questions about life. Here now is Frodo the Puppet.
Hello, Mr. Henry. I'm Frodo the Puppet. I want to ask you questions about the things that are going in the world.
Well, Frodo, that's why I'm here. And how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good, but I'm very sad about what happened in China. It isn't any good for the people and everything.
It is very sad, Frodo, and all we can do is help out. In the best way we can, go to charitynavigator.org.
Oh, that's right, charitynavigator.org. That is a good place to go.
And we can go over there and find out charities that help out.
May I ask a question about the Olympics, Mr. Henry?
Go ahead, Frodo.
Well, this coming July, when it gets good and ripe, and maybe they haven't pulled all the bodies out, do you think the smell is going to...
All right, turn it off. Turn it off. Turn it off.
What's the matter?
Another rude question from the puppet, huh?
Oh, why don't you lighten up?
Yeah, why are you lighting up, man? You know it's going to get good and ripe.
Do you understand that people have died over there, both of you?
You're talking to a puppet.
I know I'm talking to the puppet. You understand that, puppet?
Yeah, I heard about it. I read the newspapers.
You read the newspapers, huh? Did you go online, too?
Oh, you know me. I checked with Drudge.
Yeah, I checked Drudge.
You guys making a joke about that, it's not funny. You understand?
What do you mean a joke?
This summer, when it gets good and ripe, is the smell going to bother people?
Well, it's a valid question, don't you think?
No, I don't think... You should... There. Puppet goes in the drawer again. Yeah, there goes the puppet into the drawer.
Oh, boy, every time you put the puppet in, you get smothered.
I don't care. This summer, won't it get good and ripe with all the bodies in the rubble? Don't you guys understand? There's some things you don't joke about. Do you understand that? Do you understand?
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah, I do.
You guys can work up any shtick you want. I've come to expect that every time I do this bit with the Frodo the Puppet and Here Comes the Music, I know there's going to be some rude freaking question, me having my hand up its dress or whatever. That's fine. That's okay. You can make me the butt of any joke you want. But you do not make fun of people who are suffering. Do you understand?
I said I understand.
What about you?
Bringing my mom here.
What am I breaking? Your what?
You're breaking my mom.
Don't you use the...
Wee!
Oh, God.
Yeah, you're talking to a puppet, man. You need help. You need big help.
Phil Hendry.